It's the Full Force Comics Burst, brought to you by Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, with me, Diagnostic 80, and toy photography genius Brian Hickey. Today we are looking at G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, issue 272, from Larry Hammer and Robert Atkins. Let's do this. Snake Hunt Part 7. Cobra Commander wants a snake eyes of his own. The Joes have other ideas. It'll take two armies to settle this dispute. It's all hands on deck for both G.I. Joe and Cobra as living legend Larry Hammer and fan favourite artist Nitho Diaz continue this massive 10-issue event featuring every single member of G.I. Joe. There's no halftime break in this contest, folks. All action, all the time. Now, apart from Robert Atkins and Part 7, that's the exact same description as the last issue. So IDW just have given up, I think, on describing what's going on, and they're just giving a broad overview of the entire situation. No, but this is a Netho, or Neith. I say Netho. I'm probably wrong. I know other people say Netho. So apologies, Netho / Netho, if I am getting your name incorrectly pronounced. But this was a fun issue. This was a bit more interesting than the last issue. But at the same time, we're still building up, aren't we, Brian?
We've got a little bit more of the same, albeit the build-up seems to be getting much closer to Point Zero, which is like the community center in Springfield where Throwdown is being held captive. But we're still building up.
Exactly. Now, before we get into the actual issue, let's have a look at these covers. There's quite a few of these ones. So obviously the first one, the cover A, Robert Atkins and Brian Atkins, you know, keeping that kind of theme going with the similar kind of backgrounds with different snake eyes poses. And this one is kind of like almost in some sort of attack move where he's swiping two weapons across. We can't actually make out exactly what those weapons are, really, can we?
It's hard to say. I'm going to guess they're obviously bladed weapons. Yeah. That'd be my guess. But, I mean, they could be like butcher's knives. You know,
They could be knives. They could be axes. They could be, you know, those like cool, like, I forget what they're called, those blades, but they're kind of like almost like it like comes off at almost like a right angle from the top of the handle and is like a curved blade. You're right, they could just be like swords or small knives or something, but it's a nice, a nice snake eyes cover, isn't it?
Robert Atkins knows how to draw snake eyes, and we were talking about this, you know, on the last issue, and again, some of the small details in this, and, you know, again, he gets into the not just the anatomy and all the kind of muscular kind of curvature, but you look down the detail in the mask, how it's all kind of lit, how the lighting's done on the off the visor, all the detail in the web gear, even the little handles on these kind of, you know, implements on the handles of the blades where they obviously hang up or attach to the web gear somewhere, has all been like really carefully considered, and a super dynamic pose, which is, you know, trademark of Robert Atkins style. So it's absolutely beautiful.
Mr. Snake Eyes, they call him. Cover B, art by Jamie Sullivan, colors by Jesse Hege. And that is obviously another section of this wraparound, huge connected cover, not wraparound, sorry, connected cover series. And we've got, you know, again, like a number of Joes, a lot of the Ninja Force and a ninja-based team on this one. Yes. A couple of standouts. I've got to point out Steamroller, who I think should have been, he's at the top right, second from the right. It looks huge. And it's funny that he's not next to this mobile command center, which was on the previous issue. So I find that quite odd choice. But then again, when this was probably been drawn out by Jamie, he probably had him within the vicinity of the mobile command center. But then when splitting it up, he's obviously on a different cover. And then in the background, we've got the X-30s and the Sky Strikers kind of flying past, some with open wings, some with clothes, which is quite cool.
That's lovely. And you know, you've got to admire Timber poking his head in there, bottom right corner. He looks so sad.
He's sad because Budo, Jinx, and Dawn are holding up a picture of Quinn, Snake Eyes, and Quick Kick together, who obviously are all three of those are deceased in the Marvel Universe.
That's a cracker cover. I hope I end up. I'm waiting for my hard copy to arrive in the post, and I'm really hoping I get this particular cover variant. I love this.
Yeah, brilliant. Awesome. And then we have John Royal, inks by James Afraidy and colours by Jagdish Kumar for the retailer incentive. It could be cover C. I just didn't get any confirmation about that. But it's, yeah, another one. This is really cool. This is low light hiding behind a tree, being approached by bats who have obviously been torching the area with their flamethrower appendages. And this one's pretty cool.
I love this. Again, we're singing John Royal's praises like every single issue on this. His work is amazing. Nothing to do with what's in the comic, but absolutely. I want someone to write that story. Somebody write that story with low light. It's kind of like, First Blood, where he's like Rambo and these are the cops chasing him.
Why on earth we haven't had special missions running simultaneously with these particular stories? You know, low light versus some bats in the mountains sounds absolutely awesome. Like some sort of sniper mission gone wrong, and he's been made, and then he's having to like survive in the forest or whatever. That would be amazing. And I'm really surprised we're not getting those kind of issues anyway. It's almost like that we have to like settle for these covers as special mission issues.
And can make up our own stories. That's what we should do. There's a whole other issue.
We'll just make up comics bursts, shall we, from now on. We'll just do that. Yeah, on this episode, an issue that didn't exist. And finally, we have the Eastside Comics exclusives, the Virgin Variants by Kirill Repin. And they are basically Baroness in her winter garb. One is of her kind of like crouching down with a gun on show. And the other one is from the front, kind of like opening a hood open, I should say.
The illustrative work on these is fantastic. I mean, really is beautifully illustrated. I do say, or I do think that I prefer to see my Baroness looking like an elite assassin.
Yeah, agreed.
And less like a porn star in cosplay. But these are really nicely done, really nicely illustrated. In the B variant of this, where she has the open hood, she does look very predatory, almost like a wolf. And I think that's the good characteristic to capture for the Baroness, I think these are top notch.
I really like this. It kind of reminds me of when, like in X-Men, Emma Frost is they kind of put her in like a black uniform or something. It's kind of the opposite version of that with the Baroness here. Like, it'd be really cool to see a winter version, like action figure. Like with that kind of style, I think would be really cool.
I do like as well some of the detailing on the uniform, the way the Cobra sigil kind of integrates with the seams kind of on the arm and how that kind of splits the Cobra sigil. Even some of the detailing, like the different material effects on the uniform as well are pretty fantastic. So a lot of attention to detail gone into this. And like I say, beautifully illustrated, two beautifully illustrated covers.
Right, so let's get into the actual issue then. So we start on the interstate and we've got the kind of Joes in transit, basically. We've got a column of vehicles, a kind of an SUV that's leading the way, the command SUV, a couple of buses, and then all of the vehicles being transported undercover behind them. And it's not, I must admit, like, it's not the most dynamic of entrances into a real American hero issue. Like, I've always enjoyed how Larry would always, or the issues, like, back in the day, would always open with a big splash page. It felt like every single Marvel issue, there would have been maybe a couple of exceptions, but most of them opened on a full page spread of action that was going on. And I kind of feel like that would have been cool here to see everything from a distance. But obviously what I guess is happening here is they're telling the story through the panels and Netho is using that kind of space to show what is happening on the interstate.
I agree with what you're saying on a couple of levels here, where I think a big open splash page could have worked to show the convoy.
Yeah.
But you still could have worked in a lot of the text, the dialogue, you have enough real estate to work that in without compromising the impact of the visual.
Yeah.
But that said, if you picked up Snake Hunt in, say, like a trade paperback form, where one story just ends and it leads into this story here, this will flow very nicely. It won't look like a break. And that's probably because we have this continuous build-up that's been going now for three issues.
Yeah.
That we're not getting the chance to put those big visual breaks in there, or they may not make as much sense in terms of the visual narrative.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, again, like, you know, we're basically just seeing the Joes more or less as we saw them previously, just kind of like preparing, getting sorted. Duke's talking about like all the legal aspects and how we're covered, sort of. And, you know, you've got Covergirl driving the command SUV. You've got Mainframe riding shotgun. And then, like, you know, the rest of the guys in there, it's Duke, Hawk and Roadblock. So it's a pretty powerful vehicle, that one, isn't it, in terms of hierarchy?
Well, I mean, this is it. Like, this is the cream of the crop here. This is your well, you take out that SUV and the Joes suddenly have, like, you know, the leadership is just decapitated. So it's gonna be a risky move, maybe, you might think, but it's a great, you know, for us visually, it's a great panel. You have all these guys in the vehicle together. They're kind of going over the quick update on the situation, bringing the reader up to speed, and obviously confirming that we have all the legal aspects kind of covered. A little bit of humor in there with Roadblock kind of dishing it to Sambos.
Amazing.
It's got to be done.
Ham and egg. I made a whole sack full.
In a car.
Amazing. And then obviously we switch then to the first bus, and you've got Falcon, Bullhorn and Dusty in shot, and he says, right, tell them all to lock and load, Bullhorn, and he turns around with his massive like megaphone and says lock and load, and everyone's like, bloody hell, we get the message, and they're all like holding their ears. It's like, thanks, mate. And they're like, you know, again, we've got a lot of characters now. In the last issue, let's clear something up. We was struggling with the identity of a certain character on the bus, and I completely understand everyone who didn't know who it was, because when I asked Robert Atkins the other day about this particular character, I was like, is it Cannonball? Is it, you know, all these obscure characters that looked kind of similar to him? He was like, good guess, but no, it's actually a character he designed and created and would put randomly in the backgrounds of like, you know, covers and all sorts. And I'll flash those images up on screen as I'm talking about them. It's a guy he developed called Hot Sauce, and he's Puerto Rican, because he said that there are no Puerto Rican characters in G.I. Joe. And he thought that it would be cool to have a character like unofficially just, you know, thrown in there with a little bit of backstory and so on and so forth. And just to get a bit more detail in that, he said he created the character with a few friends back in his original IDW Joe run. He said he realized there were no Puerto Rican Joes and came up with this jungle-based guerrilla-fighting demolitions guy. Nothing official. I put him in the background of crowd scenes any chance I can. He's been on a couple of covers. So I was like, you know, that's brilliant. And he says the other co-creators are Elvin Hernandez and Enrique Rivera, who did these pages, and I'll flash those pages up as well. I thought that was really, really cool. He said, I've snuck Hot Sauce into the background of every run on Joe I've done. He's made it onto two covers. And like I said, I'll flash those up in the background. So really cool, awesome little bit of insight there from Robert Atkins. I couldn't be bothered to put all that information on the last episode, so I'm doing it now. But so we get to this bus scene, and we've got, Crazy Legs, Shipwreck, Flint, Blowtorch, Chuckles. I can't tell necessarily who the other blonde, Windchill possibly, Lifeline. We've got Frostbite, Law and Order, Beachhead, Lady J, Leatherneck, Lowlight, and Psych Out. So it's, you know, a lot of characters. What I should mention is later on we're going to see Lady J elsewhere, and there is a explanation for that. And then obviously we had that really cute scene with Law and Order where Order's holding his ears with his paws because Bullhorn's shouted too loud.
I know, I love that. Though there is a little bit of a setup here, obviously alluding to what you mentioned there about Lady J, where she gives us a clue.
Yes.
So this particular part of our, of the convoy, she says, are going to be deaf by the time we get to the airfield.
Yeah.
So this that's a little setup for something that's gonna that was gonna be revealed a little bit later.
Yeah. Good point, actually. Good spot. And then obviously, as we kind of go to the next bus, we're kind of going down the column, basically. We're seeing all the Joes involved again. And we've got Airtight driving the bus now, where it was Grand Slam before. And so I'm guessing that's Grand Slam next to him. Gung Ho is now shouting lock and load, and everyone's like doing the same thing. So obviously, Gung Ho shouting is the same as Bullhorn using his megaphone, which is amazing. And now this is a really interesting group of Joes because, so obviously we've got, sorry, I'll start from top to bottom of the page as we see it. Spirit and Freedom at the back, Mutton Junkyard at the back with Spirit and Freedom. Then we've got Hit and Run, Stretcher, Bazooka, Charbroil, Hardball, Recoil, Lightfoot, classic favourite of mine, Zap, Alpine, Snowjob, Blizzard, oh, I want to say Short Fuse, Tripwire. Yeah, that makes sense because it's Short Fuse and Tripwire. Recondo, Barbecue, and then yeah. So that's the team on this particular bus. But the thing I want to point out is the fact that Hit and Run, who got onto the bus in the last issue in his green fatigues, and I'm not complaining about this, is now wearing his Tiger Force uniform from his European exclusive action figure, which was Neatho's idea, apparently, to do. And also, Jay Brown went all out in putting him in his Tiger Force outfit, which I've cosplayed in the past, so I'm super happy to see that.
Brilliant. That's a lovely touch, just to get that variant in there.
And what I'm in my head, I feel like they've stopped a few times to get like food and some other things. And along the way, Hit and Run has just changed into his other gear that's in his bag. That's what I think's happened.
I think you're not far off the mark there, because you did note that the drivers had changed from the last issue. So it's clearly indicative of it's a long drive. There possibly have been a couple of stops. If nothing else, just to kind of, swap drivers around so the drivers don't get too fatigued.
I just hope we see Hit and Run in the next issue in this Tiger Force gear, Like, I hope that continues throughout now, because my God, that's awesome.
So the lock and load continues as we kind of work our way down the convoy, but now we're getting to the big guns that are on the various trailers. And when the order to lock and load is kind of issued there, they say, well, we'll have to unload the mauler to be able to do that.
Yeah, no, and like you've got what, Backstop, Steeler, Wildcard, who is now correctly Wildcard, and you've got Cross Country. So yeah, we've got all of our team accounted for now, haven't we? So that's the roster. We've been run through. We've got the whole group now. And then we flip over to Springfield again.
So we're literally back in Snake Eyes' cell, exactly where we left him in the last issue. He's doing his mystic finger knits for Laura 343. And she's like saying, look, I don't believe in that kind of ninja mumbo jumbo. So it's not going to work on me. It can't possibly work. No way can it work. And we see her struggling. She's starting to sweat.
There's some beautiful artwork here as well, isn't there? I love these panels, actually. I think this is some of Neatho's best work, in my opinion.
Neatho is, we love Neatho on this show. We're a massive fan, and the work here is fantastic. The facial expressions. So, talk about you kind of Laura struggling to resist the mystical power of, Throwdown's mystical power, and you can see the real struggle on her face, trying to not be overcome by Snake Eyes. Then it cuts away very quickly to Cobra Commander and Mindbender, who are again just giving us a little recap on their diabolical scheme. So for any readers who are coming in late, they're quickly bringing you up to speed here. But the way Neatho has drawn these two characters, they just look evil. And then it cuts back to the prison cell, and Laura 343 is now unconscious. Throwdown has taken control of her weapon, and he's getting ready to face Cobra Commander and the Vipers who are about to enter the cell.
I think it's that panel in particular that I was kind of really looking at as I'm looking at the double page at the moment. But it's that one of Snake Eyes standing over Laura with you know, picking up her gun and about to kind of make his way out. I just love that, like the perspective of everything. It's just a gorgeous shot, really beautiful panel right there. Beautiful work, Nitho. As they're getting closer to Snake Eyes, we flip back into orbit now, and we've got the Defiant and what they're doing in space, which is kind of almost getting the old satellite out of the way so that they can put the new one out in place. The satellite, the shooter anyone anywhere weapon that G.I. Joe Colton and G.I. Jane operate. And they're obviously discussing things as well in the Chrysler building. They're kind of going, you know, we need to get this moving. We need to be in place ASAP. And also, I should point out, Slipstream is piloting the Defiant's little shuttle.
Yes. So what we have is we're in orbit. We see all the debris from the satellite that had been destroyed previously. Slipstream and Payload are getting they're getting the new satellite in place, and what they let us know is, you know, that they're okay, so we've successfully got it installed, but we have some adjustments to make to get it fully operational. And then it cuts back to the Chrysler building, where we have Joe Colton and G.I. Jane, who again are giving us another sit rep. They're saying, like, the Joes are almost in Springfield, they're vastly outnumbered, and you know, time is really, really tight. We have to get this weapon up and running, or the Joes don't stand a chance, basically.
I will say that I'm surprised they haven't used the opportunity to squeeze Countdown in, who's another, like, space Joe. Another specific, you know, specialty wise, Countdown is, you know, that's his, you know, he works in space. I'm pretty sure he's not dead in the continuity, so I am really surprised they haven't utilized him instead of someone like Slipstream, who's been in this run a number of times already. So, you know, they've covered Slipstream in terms of his involvement in the issues. And obviously, you can get him in at any point within the next 30 Conquests. So I'm rather surprised we haven't seen Countdown there. And will we see Countdown? Will that be the one character that doesn't make it in this in this issue now I've said that?
Well, we'll see. I mean, hopefully some air support will be called in when we when the battle finally kicks off in Springfield. So that could be a great opportunity for Countdown to come in and save the day.
And also, like, when we flip back to Springfield, just outside of Springfield, I should say, this is a really quirky part of the story, I thought, because the Joes don't really know what Zartan and the Dreadnoks are up to. And the Joes are at a gas station. This is the team of Stalker, Rock and Roll, Wade Collins, and Clutch in the Bongo the Balloon Bear van. They've pulled up to this gas station. They've gone in with their guns, and they've told the people, I'm guessing they want them out of the way, hidden out the back, so that they're, you know, not in harm's way come later on, possibly. I don't know. But it does feel like they're robbing the joint.
it totally looks like they're robbing the joint. But my thinking on this is, when they ask these guys to basically tie themselves up and you know, get locked in the back room, that sounds pretty kinky.
It doesn't.
It's more because they don't trust anybody in Springfield. They know they're now in Cobra territory.
Good point.
These guys could be undercover Cobra agents who could just say, hey, we just saw this crazy balloon van with these guys armed to the teeth heading into town. You know, just take them out or stop them or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So as a precaution, they're like, we're going to lock you up and just keep you quiet till all this is kind of blown over.
And then, like, the Zartan and the Dreadnoks turn up, and Zartan's like, we are on your side today. Tomorrow things may change. And Clutch is like, this is a surprise. And then the Iron Grenadiers fly in, and they all turn up. And Destro's like, you know, you have my Iron Grenadiers at your disposal, kind of thing. And they're just like, what the f*** is going on? Like, they're so confused, and they look up in the air, and they're like, any more surprises? And they're like looking up in the air to see if there's any, like, aliens or anything else that could happen at this moment in time, which I think is really funny. It's like a cute bit of humor, I think.
But actually, the very next line then from Zartan is that I left some cash on the counter. No sense in being utter villains. They basically have a free shop, and the Dreadnoks decide to pay for
very unlike very unlike them, isn't it? Yeah, I love it's really it's a funny little I do like that. I thought that was a very cute little part of the story in actual fact. And yeah, and then obviously we're back in Springfield and Snake Eyes has escaped and he's shooting up the place, killing Vipers left, right and centre. Mindbender and Cobra Commander are hiding. And we're getting some more beautiful artwork, aren't we, here from Neetho.
Again, magnificent stuff. So, you know, we're getting the action that we've been waiting for for a long time. Throwdown or Snake Eyes, he's busted out and he is on an absolute killing spree. Going crazy here. And you know, fortunately for him, he said that there's only a small number of Vipers with Mindbender and Cobra Commander in this particular, you know, who've come down to the cell. So he gets control of the situation very quick. But coming back to that, the artwork, there's this magnificent kind of half-page panel where he's, you know, Throwdown is perched above these kind of toxic cylinders, you know, containing some sort of, you know, presumably part of the brainwave scanner,
yeah.
And he's just kind of opening fire as he's kind of, you know, doing some sort of ninja flying kick through the door. It's just
he's parkouring over that stuff, in my opinion. It's amazing. yeah, and again, like he gets control of the commander and Mindbender under you know gunpoint, and then we switch straight back over to for the first time since the last issue. We see the Arashikage clan exiting the train in Springfield, and they're kind of all very wary. They're kind of saying that, wow, everything seems normal. And he says, yeah, of course, everything on the surface is Scarlet. So, you know, keep your head on your shoulders. Let's, like, make sure we know what we're doing here. And then, obviously, they get approached by a cop who wants to see ID. And what happens?
So, basically, well, I actually love this move. So they look like a traveling troupe of musicians coming off the train. The cop comes up and, you know, as you say, looks for ID, and a Storm Shadow reaches around and gives him the Arashikage death touch, but set for stun.
I love those. That's a beautiful Larry Hammerism, and I love it. I think that's an absolute beauty, isn't it?
I love that. And of course, this gives them their kind of motive to get some transport and get into the center of town. So they say they're, you know, we've got to get this cop to a hospital very quickly, and they commandeer a taxi, and now they've got a set of wheels.
Is that cop drunk? Bad donut. Love that. Love that. And again, like, we're still in Springfield, so there's no, they're not saying, like, you know, somewhere else. They're not changing the scene. It's just back at the community center. The Vipers sealed the doors shut. They're kind of searching for Snake Eyes, who's hiding with Cobra Commander and Dr. Mindbender. Again, he's got them under gunpoint. Laura seems to be kind of coming too. And that's the last we see of the inside of the community center. So Snake Eyes is probably about to just burst out and take out all the Vipers, or is Laura going to come in and kind of save the day a little bit for Cobra Commander and Mindbender? I suppose that's what we're anticipating in the next issue there. But then we get some really beautiful action again, and we get the team. Some of the team members that were on the bus are now off the bus and they're in a plane. And this is what that little bit at the beginning of the issue was, where Lady J said about the airfield. And we have, if I'm correct here, we have Lady J, we have Ripcord, Torpedo, we have Alpine, Airborne, Freefall, and Muskrat. I think that's the whole team that are jumping in. Actually, no, not it's not Alpine. Apologies, it's Tunnel Rat.
Tunnel Rat, yes.
Because you can see Tunnel Rat in the first kind of panel, but then on the other panel it does look a little bit like Alpine, but it's not Alpine. I think it's Tunnel Rat, and I'm guessing it's Airborne at the right at the top of that group of free fallers, based on the colors. And I think Airborne is definitely in that team in the back as well. So yeah, that's you know, if I'm wrong, correct me, but I'm pretty sure that's the team. They've commandeered this plane. These guys are just, like, helping out, and they're worried because they don't want to get in trouble, and Lady J reminds them, hey, don't worry, we've signed all the liability waivers.
And what I find kind of very amusing here is that the plane itself, I can't make out the exact name on it, but I can see that it's a skydiving school.
Yeah.
So they've clearly posed as, you know, they're all on they're all on annual leave here. So they're obviously posing as tourists who are doing a bit of skydiving for fun.
I think it says Two Vets. I think that's the name of the company. It's like, it's almost like a veterans skydiving company.
Two Vets Skydiving School. So, but obviously they're all fully trained, combat professionals who are skydiving in on a covert mission. So again, this puts these guys right smack bang in the middle of Springfield. They've just jumped out of the plane. They're coming right in above the community center where Throwdown is being held. And then it cuts back to the, down on the ground outside the community center, and we see the October Guard.
Yeah, and we've got, obviously we've got Brekov, we've got Dana, Dragonsky, Strave, Stormavik, and Horoshow. And they're kind of all joking, saying that Horoshow used to smell like boiled cabbage, but now he smells like motor oil. And he's like, just your imagination, Stormavik. I have closed system lubrication. So again, they're really pushing the fact that Horoshow is an android. But at the same time, like, I still don't understand why everyone else is there. And I really need some explanation as to why the others think he is a robot and they aren't, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, maybe they're all going to get shot to bits, and we'll see the mechanics inside them all. But will that still explain it? Everything? Probably not.
Yeah, I love how Neetho has drawn Dragonsky. He's the one with the flamethrower in the purple, and like looks an absolute beast in that panel.
Yeah, that is absolutely fantastic looking. Can't wait to see Dragonsky in action.
You don't have to speak in Russian because of this October Guard. I also like
Popeye.
I love the fact that Neetho makes all of the different characters in the October Guard very full of personality. They're all very different. So Dana, she's got that kind of like young, effervescent look. You've got Brekov, who looks like old, withered, like leader, like smoking a cigar and very kind of a little bit scrawny as well.
Humphrey Bogart, yeah, nearly,
very much so. I don't like Shrage is almost very like war-torn and old as well with his long grey hair. Horoshow is this big, fat, dumpy fella, but he's huge. Stormavik is like this, I don't know, he's kind of like an elite kind of soldier. So, no, bald, but he's got the beret on, very kind of like built quite strong. And then you've got Dragonsky, who just looks like an absolute machine. Like, I've never seen him drawn like that before. Just amazing.
He's fairly bulked up, all right. Wow.
He looks like Bane with all those pipes going in and out of him. And obviously we've got Crystal Ball on the ground, who's relaying information to Zartan, and that's where we end it. He spots the October Guard, and he spots the paratroopers coming in, and he's feeding that information. Like, these guys are on the ground, they're ready to assault, and he's telling Zartan what the deal is.
So, I mean, essentially he confirms that the October Guard have just done the roll by recce,
yeah,
and there's a troop of Joes coming in to land on the roof. So I'm not sure if it says how far out of town Zartan is, but I imagine it's only a couple of clicks. So it's like we have the first batch of Joes are now on site with the backup from the October Guard, and reinforcements, not too far away. And we would expect serious action from page one, issue number 8.
Yes. So, I mean, let's talk about your overall feelings of the issue and your potatings and all that kind of stuff, Brian. Because we've been, we complained a little bit on the last episode about another build-up issue. This is another build-up issue, but I felt like there was more going on. It felt like there was more suspense, like more things are getting closer. There's a little bit of action with Snake Eyes. There's the free-falling aspect. There's a few things going in that was way more interesting, I feel, than the last issue.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this issue. I mean, overall, I've enjoyed Snake Hunt, and I think it's been a great run. Maybe not the best of some of the arcs that we've had in this particular issue in the past, but certainly very enjoyable. This one is one of the better issues in the last run. So while there's still some building up, we can feel that we're very much at the end of the build up phase. Now we've got boots on the ground, literally boots on the ground now, right outside. We've got Snake Eyes, aka Throwdown, running amok inside the building. There's plenty of action happening here. So this is, I'm going to go back with the full 5 on this one. Really enjoyed it. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how this is going to unfold over the next three issues.
I agree with what you're saying there. I think, you know, for me, I was a little bit disappointed on first reading that we weren't in the thick of it yet. And we were still like, I feel like this issue should have been last issue in terms of movement and where they've been and where they've got to. I feel like we should have, in these last two issues, they should have at least been combined into one in terms of getting from point A to point B. We don't need to see every single piece, every single point along the way. I think we can fill that in with our imagination. Unless something important needs to happen, I don't think we need to see every single, you know, thing that they do. So I have to agree. I think it's a much better issue. Really enjoyed some of those little things, like, you know, hit and run in Tiger Force gear, you know, the action that Snake Eyes is kicking off in you know, at the community center. You know, we're seeing a lot of Joe characters. They've packed a lot in. I'm very happy with everything so far. And yeah, and I think that so far is for me, it's got to be a 4 for me on this one. So this has gone up a potating from last issue. So I'm getting back up there again. I'm catching you up. Yeah, brilliant. Another one in the bag for us, Brian. And yeah, we'll be hopefully we better get to that Disorder of Battle part 2 soon as well. My God, that's taken me ages.
Well, you know, that's... before we close out on this one, I think some honourable mentions, like Larry has given us some nice moments of humour throughout this particular story.
Yeah.
You know, the writing, I'm pretty happy with the writing on this here. We're, you know, all the parties are now zeroing in on Snake Eyes, which is great. Again, honourable mentions for the artwork. I mean, Nito's work is superb. And I love that we got two of the finest Joe artists out there to kind of split the work on this particular one. And again, you know, big nod for the colours on this particular issue too, which is, it's a beautiful looking issue. So, you know, I'm pretty happy with overall where this is at. And as I say, looking forward to issue 8 next month.
Absolutely. Brian, thanks for jumping on yet again and talking A Real American Hero with me.
My pleasure.
That's it for this instalment of the Full Force Comics Burst. Thank you to my awesome co-host, Brian Hickey. See you next time. And as always, Full Force. Make sure you get involved with the discussion by liking, sharing and commenting on these videos, and as always you can keep up with the show after listening by following on Twitter @TheFullForce, liking the Facebook page facebook.com/TheFullForce, and if you would like to contact the show you can message us on either of those platforms with feedback or questions. We have also started a Patreon page, so if you want to see your name up in lights on these videos or enjoy exclusive bonus content, then check out patreon.com/TheFullForcePodcast or click the link on any of the posts this podcast appears in. Full Force. And a big shout out to our sponsors, Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, located at 601 Business Loop 70 West Suite 263, located in the Parkade Center, Columbia, Missouri. You can visit their website at distantplanetcomics.com and on Facebook at facebook.com/distantplanetcomics.